Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 21 of Season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 thriller, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is my good friend Richard Kirkham of Kirkham, A Movie a Day, and the Shepherd of the Lambcast. Welcome back for this for yet another season, Richard.
Glad to join you again, Rob. It's always fun talking about a movie that I love, and The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 is just exactly that, something that I could talk about endlessly.
Oh, wow. Great. So we're going to talk a lot about it this week. that I can guarantee you. We'll see how much we actually talk about, but we have the option of talking about it a lot. So why don't you start off by telling me and everyone else your background with this movie?
Well, I actually saw the movie when it was released back in 1974. I'm trying to remember the theater for sure. It was either the Garfield Theater on Valley Boulevard in Alhambra or the El Rey Theater, which was on Main Street in Alhambra. Those were two of the hangouts that I would go to as a kid to see movies. And they specialized for the most part in kind of action kinds of films. So I think it was the Garfield Theater, but I can't quite remember. You know, and it was when I was in high school that it came out. I was a fan of Robert Shaw, but I was not as big a fan of Robert Shaw as I became later on in his career in my life.
Well, because he hadn't made that other movie yet. Yeah, exactly.
You know, but I knew who he was because I'd seen The Battle of the Bulge and From Russia with Love, and I was looking forward to the movie. And let's face it, it's a heist film set in New York. I liked a lot of 70s films that were like that. I'd seen, at the Garfield Theater, as a matter of fact, I'd seen The Hot Rock 2 years before, which is a terrific film where, you know, it's a serial crime as opposed to serial criminals.
Right. Not as good as this movie, but it is.
No. But a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Okay. And is it something that you've seen often or...
Pardon me. Yes, I have seen. I've watched it pretty regularly. I would say maybe once every year or two for the past 20 years, I've seen it. I'm sure I've seen it a dozen times. I've also seen it in a retrospective screening a couple of times. I went to the TCM Film Festival maybe 5 years ago, and they had a screening. And guy who was the curator of the New York Museum of Film Art was there to talk about the film, and that was quite interesting.
Oh, wow. Very cool. You never got to meet any of the actors in the movie, did you?
No, never managed to do that.
Okay. Obviously, I can assume that your favorite character is Mr. Blue. Or your favorite actor in the movie is Mr.
My favorite actor would be Robert Shaw, but I got to tell you, Lieutenant Garver's a pretty good character, and all the secondary characters are great in their different annoying ways.
Yes, yes, we will talk about some of them through the course of this week. We get to see a lot of them. You know, some of them we know who their names are, and some of them we can just guess what their names are. You know, we're not really sure. with some of them, but okay. So minute 21 begins with the train once again coming to a stop, ends with Blue leading the hostages to move backwards. We ended things on Friday talking about we have Kaz and his guys that are sitting there trying to figure out what the hell is going on with this train, you know, and we talked a lot about the technology that we get to see on the screen here, which is great. It's just, you know, it's just flashing little lights, but it still works really, really well to give us an impression of what's going on.
I think it's reflective of the technology of the time. It probably is modeled on the real world technology that they were using in the subway system in 1973, 74, with the little light indicators moving along the tracks and, the train paths laid out, and you're trying to keep track of everything all at once. With contemporary computer technology, it would look a lot different, but I think it, I assume for the most part that those are all sets that they created, but I'm sure that they're based very closely on the real world
Yeah,
situation rooms
I would think
and,
so. I would think they did a little bit of research to figure
yeah.
that out. That would be
Yeah,
my
the
guess.
production design on it is terrific.
Yeah, there's no question about it. It's great looking at it. It makes you really feel as if you're in all of these different places that that we get to see.
Yeah.
And I think part of it also is that the way that the characters are all played by these supporting actors also helps give us an idea of who all these people are and what they're doing and stuff like that,
Yeah.
which is great because it adds another layer to the movie where you get to see these people and you're like, oh wow, that is
Well, I think it creates a lot of authenticity. They used New York actors who had been working in New York television and films for years and years and years. A lot of these guys I'd seen, I mean, I didn't know them by name, but I know that I'd seen them in a thousand things that had appeared on, television especially, often things that were produced in New York City area. Well, I mentioned the Hot Rock before. There's a character in this early scene that is in the Hot Rock. The actor is in the Hot Rock. He's the one that has the other key that when Redford gives the hypnotic response, Afghanistan, Bananistan, the guy that he's influencing there is the one that is with Kaz downstairs in the trunk room there.
Ah, really? That's Kaz? Wow.
Not Kaz, but the other guy, the bald-headed guy.
Ah, you're talking about Marino.
Yeah, I think that's the character's name.
Marino, who's played by oh, what's
Something Weil, I think it is.
that's right. Robert Weil, Marino.
Okay. Yeah.
Ah, he was in the Hot Rock. Okay, I mean, we were talking a little bit about him last week. I apparently had forgotten that he was also in that one because we talked about the fact that he's in the Hudsucker Proxy and Moonstruck and a bunch of stuff, but I didn't
Well, like I said,
remember.
we just mentioned, I had just mentioned that other heist film, The Hot Rock, and I
Right,
know
yeah,
that he's in it.
he played a character named Albert in the Hot Rock. Yeah. Oh, he was also in Badge 373. Interesting. Have you ever seen that one?
I saw it when it came out. That's the last time I saw it. So that was 50 years ago, 50 plus years ago. I have no memory of it.
So that's a great police drama with Robert Duvall
Right.
about a
Eddie Egan. Is it
who?
based on the character of Eddie
Yeah,
Egan?
Eddie Egan. Yeah, exactly. Very good.
Yeah.
You see, I couldn't have told you
That I
that.
remembered. What
I've seen the
happens in the
movie, and
movie, I
I
couldn't
could
tell
not
you.
told you that. But Eddie Egan is also in the movie. He plays a character named Scanlan.
Yep.
Well, I should probably rewatch it. It's been a few years since I've seen it. I really enjoyed it when I saw it. Yeah, again, a lot of these characters just pop up from we can they're recognizable from a lot of different movies that they had small parts in.
Yeah.
Right. So the train we get an external view of the train where it just skids to a stop. And then we're back in the control room, and we see Kaz just sitting there, and we still can see the salt and pepper shaker behind him, meaning these guys are all having lunch at their desks, and they need to make
Yeah.
sure they got their salt and pepper. And then Marino says he stopped again, the crazy dumbass son of a bitch stopped again. He goes, he's halfway between stations. What the hell's going on? And then Kaz gets up and goes, pure mental case. I'm gonna nail his pecker to the goddamn wall for this. Just Kaz, take it easy, will ya? Oh, come on. And then we get a shot of Mrs. Jenkins, just to remind us that there is a lady present. And he goes, "Oh, come on. If I gotta watch my language just because they let a few broads in, I'm gonna quit." How the hell can you
How
run
can you run a
a
train situation if you can't speak your mind?
How the hell can you run a goddamn railroad without swearing? It's just great. Again, Kaz is one of my favorite supporting characters in this movie because he doesn't give a damn about anything. He just
Well,
speaks his mind. And that's part of his downfall.
yeah,
Spoiler
well,
alert.
I think one of the things that's true about this film is that it gets a lot of its authenticity, like I said, from the characters and the dialogue that's going on here. And this is a character that you could really believe worked for the New York subway system. And his attitude about the whole thing is, half belligerent, half frustrated, and certainly wanting to be in control of what's going on and not having the ability to do it. The other guy, Dick O'Neill, is also in this minute. He's not in the same scene, but
Right. Well,
he's in the minute.
he's sort of in the same scene because we hear
Is
him on
on
the
the
radio first. We hear him
right.
say, "Grand Central Terminal, this is the desk train master." He goes, "Who the hell's in charge down there?" And then
Yeah.
Marino turns to Kaz and goes, "It's for you, Mr.
Yeah, she's not going to answer that call.
Yeah, he definitely not. Ah, that's right. It's Mrs. Jenkins that does it. Sorry. Right. And Mrs. Jenkins then says, "It's for you, Mr. Dalowitz." And she has this really big smirk on her face, especially after the line of what Kaz just said. So it's just funny. She's sort of reveling in the fact that that somebody's gonna chew out Kaz possibly. And then Kaz takes the phone and goes, "It's me, Frank, Kaz Dalowitz. We're watching it on the board." He goes, "What the hell good is watching it? I got trains piling up behind it. Get some goddamn supervision down there." He goes, "It's on its way, Frank." And at this point, Kaz just puts his jacket on and is getting ready to his jacket and hat on
Yeah.
in order to leave. Now it's actually very funny that he's putting his jacket and hat on because he just showed up just a few minutes ago. But apparently, we never really know what time of year this is. It's not winter because there's no snow on the ground. It could be, maybe late fall or something like that. But the fact that he takes his hat and jacket means that it possibly is a little chilly outside.
Well, they do mention that there's an election coming up. And that the mayor is down 22 points on in the polls. So I'm assuming it's sometime in the fall.
Okay, that's a good assumption. For that.
Because the final mayoral election would be in November.
That's true. And then the shot changes and as Kaz is leaving, he goes, "I'll be back." So you see, it's not a Schwarzenegger line. It's a Kaz
Oh,
Dalowitz line.
I thought it was more like the horror film line, when the guys walk out of the room and say, "I'll be back, I'll be right back," and then of course they never come back.
Oh, well, of course. I mean that works too. I actually you've probably seen the recent documentary about Jaws at 50.
Oh yeah.
So Cameron says on that, James Cameron talks about the fact that he never expected people to care about the line, "I'll be back."
Yeah.
It was just a throwaway line that ended up becoming iconic. Similar to what's the line that they refer to in the documentary that's a similar
Well, I
line?
assume it's the bigger boat.
That's right, which apparently was ad-libbed.
Yeah.
You would know that better than I would. But whatever I can throw out Jaws trivia to Richard, I'll do
I'll try and get it right.
you never know. Later this week, when you have trivia questions, you might get some Jaws questions because it'll.
It could happen.
I don't know because it's all random. I don't I couldn't tell you which one you're gonna get. So,
You
but
spin the wheel.
yeah, I definitely do. And I mean I've had some guests, we would like talk about a particular movie, and then when I'd spin the wheel and they would actually get one of those movies. So it's very interesting from that perspective. So we'll have to wait and see what's going to be thrown out at you.
I'll be waiting with bated breath.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure you
Or chummed breath, as it might be.
will. Exactly. And so then the shot changes, and we're back near the train, and we see Green step out of the cab, where Blue and Danny Doyle, the engineer, are both standing right outside the door of the cab. And then Green goes, "I've turned off the power." He goes, "All right, thank you." And then Blue turns around and says, "All right, everybody in this part of the car, move to the back. Come on." And he starts herding them backwards. I mean, we see the two co-eds. We can see the drunk woman who's sleeping on the side there. We can see the old Jewish guy that still gets me, the fact that this actor is only 60. I he
I
looks
tell you,
so much
people looked
older.
older back then than they do nowadays.
Yeah, definitely. No, but I maybe there's just a lot of makeup, or do you think that he really looked that old at the time?
Oh, I think he probably looked that old at the time. You know, in 1974, being 60 was being old. Nowadays, of course, we look at 60 as being older, but not necessarily ancient.
Correct. I mean, he also acts older than 60
Yeah.
with the way that he's talking. Again, I think that this is just the way he wants to play the character.
Yeah.
I don't think that he's meant to be taken at face value as a 60-year-old. That's what I think. I could be wrong. You
Well,
never know.
then they never, I don't think they specify his age, do they?
No. He's credited as the old man. That's it.
Yeah.
It's Michael Gorin. That's the name of the actor who plays him. And I mean, he lived for another 13 years after this movie came out. He made it to he died at the age of 72.
So yeah, he was 60 when they made the movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so then he starts like herding them backwards to the back of the train. And
Right.
we'll have to wait till tomorrow to find out why. Like, what's his plan?
What
What is
happens
he trying to
next?
do here? Who knows? I mean, I do like the fact that they give us some of the technical stuff. I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about it later in the week, but the fact that Green's talking about the fact that he turned the power off on the train, he's there to deal with all the technical train issues.
Right.
Which once again, I keep asking all my guests this: do you think that Mr. Blue is the one who thought up this whole heist idea, or is this similar to like a Reservoir Dog type of thing, where you have Joe, who's behind it all, and he hires these guys to plan a heist for him and stuff
No,
like
this is Mr. Blue's job. This is his heist. They're not working for anybody else.
that. I mean, again, there's no way for us to know the truth. It's just my impression is
Well, we'd have to jump ahead to the end of the film for me to give you my reasons for believing that to be true.
You can tell me them right now. It's fine.
Well,
Again, anyone who's listening to
they've
this, write
already
us down.
planned on how to divide up the money. And
Okay.
they're all taking the individual equal shares. So they're not planning on paying anybody else.
Well, they're taking individual shares, and then they're going to be meeting up somewhere. So
I didn't get the impression that they were meeting again. I got the impression that they were avoiding each other
No, because Mr.
once they
Blue
left the train.
says to Green, "Meet me where we agreed." He does say that. So, you can look at it from that perspective that, okay, we're each going to take a quarter of the money, and then we're going to
Yeah,
get somewhere and we're going
they're not going to be sharing it with anybody. It just doesn't come across that way at all.
to. Okay. Again, there's no way of us knowing for 100% of which way that leans, But I you know me, I like trying to explore things
Yeah.
that different possibilities.
Let me think of what else I could talk about on that. And that's a thing to talk about. That's a thing that happens.
Okay. But because here you have each of them basically has their job. Mr. Blue is obviously the one in charge here of the actual heist itself. Green is the guy who knows about the trains.
Brown and Gray are
And then Brown
crowd
and Gray are
control.
both crowd control. And then it's very interesting that they're both crowd control, but they have very different methods of how they deal with crowd control, for better or for worse, depending on who you are. As we know later, Blue isn't necessarily happy that he chose Gray to be on this particular heist with him.
I assume on the job board, you don't get a lot of choices on this. You know?
I don't know. I would
When you go to
think.
LinkedIn, there aren't as many people who are listing
What do you
themselves
mean LinkedIn?
as.
It's Craigslist, isn't it? The dark web Craigslist from 1974. Looking for someone to help me hijack a subway train.
Sometimes you have to take what
Train
you can get.
experience and necessary. And comfortable wearing a fake mustache. All right, is there anything else that you wanted to discuss about this particular episode?
Not about this particular minute, no.
Okay. All right, great. So every Monday we have a segment called Mathau Monday, where my guests will give their top five Walter Mathau performances. So Richard, why don't you start off with your number one and work your way up? Now, sorry, why don't you start off with your number five?
Thank you. I was just going to ask that question. How am I working my way up if I start at number
So
one?
Richard.
Yeah. Start off with number five and work my way up. You got it. Number five, I got the Bad News Bears and Buttermaker, the coach manager of the Bears in the baseball film set in Southern California, where he is a pool man who has a background in baseball. And he's, basically a borderline alcoholic. Okay, maybe he is an alcoholic, and he's responsible for the kids. It's a good performance, and he relates to the kids the way a cranky old guy would do. He's not automatically mean to them, but he does treat them like a tough guy would. So I like that performance quite well.
Okay,
Number four.
I actually just rewatched it the other day
Did you
because
enjoy it?
I enjoyed it even more. I mean, again, I don't like the remake, and I definitely don't like the sequels because the sequels just the only thing good about the Bad News Bears and Breaking Training is the scene where you get Reggie Jackson cheering for the Bears. That's about it. Other than that.
I know I saw the sequels, but those are films that I saw only once.
And you're not missing anything by not
Right.
having seen them again.
Number four is the Sunshine Boys, which came out the year after Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, and he co-stars with George Burns about a couple of old vaudevillians who get a chance to redo their famous sketch on a national TV show that's kind of looking back at that era. And it's clear why the two of them had a hard time working together. And Mathau, look, it's kind of a stereotype in the last 20 years of his life that he played cranky characters. Later on he's in Grumpier Old Men and Grumpy Old Men, but this is one of those ones where he's just cranky because that's what the part calls for, somebody who's in a bad mood.
And again, he and Burns are great playing off one another.
Yes, they are. And it's funny because Mathau is much younger than Burns was when they made the movie. They aged him up quite a bit. Number three is a movie that you'll probably be familiar with if you remember one of your film genre entries that we did a couple of years ago. I'm picking Koch,
Of course.
which is one of the few films where Walter Matthau goes the opposite direction. Instead of playing cranky, he actually plays kind of soft and fuzzy. He's an older man who is living with his son's family, and it's a little awkward, and he gets involved with helping a girl who's pregnant, and it's a sweet story, and he plays a somebody that you would hope would be your own grandfather.
Yeah, I liked him in that role also.
Number two is The Odd Couple, which is, probably an iconic role that people would recognize him from. Oscar Madison is a slob who takes in his friend, who is the exact opposite of him, and Jack Lemmon and he played off of each other on a regular basis. They had done the fortune cookie a couple of years before, and Matthau won the Academy Award for supporting actor for the fortune cookie. But I think that the character of Oscar Madison is probably a little bit more iconic. People would recognize that name certainly. And so I kind of like that performance is the best, or the second best anyway. And my number one is the film that shows Walter Matthau's character as the smartest guy in the room, the smartest guy on the screen on a regular basis, and that's Charlie Verry,
Yeah,
where
I
he
like
takes
that. I
on.
like that movie.
Yeah, no, I think it's a terrific film, and I think it's a good performance because he plays somebody who knows how much danger he's in, but he also knows that he's smarter than the people that he's up against.
I found that to be similar to what he did in Hopscotch.
Yeah, Hopscotch was a few years
Yeah,
later, but yeah,
Hopscotch
he's
was the
a
beginning of
spy in Hopscotch.
the.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And you got a romance with that too.
Well, come on. I mean, if you're gonna, if you're gonna have a romance, you need to have if you're gonna have Walter Matthau, you have to have a romance. I mean, he even was he was in a movie. I'm trying to remember what it was called. Where he was in love. It might have even been his character's wife, but I don't think so. With like the first female Supreme Court justice.
Oh, first Monday in
Yeah,
October.
exactly.
Yeah, that wasn't quite a romance, but there's kind of a, we would call it a bromance, except that they are opposite sex in that situation. Jill Clayburgh is the female justice. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's a cute film.
Yeah.
And it did come out right before we had our first
That's
female
right.
justice on the
Came
Supreme
out in
Court.
81, the same year that Sandra Day O'Connor was given a slot.
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much for that list. So every day we also will play a game called Name That Remake, where I will
Okay.
randomly give you a little bit of information about a movie that was remade. I will tell you a brief synopsis and the year that the original movie came out and the year that the remake came out, and you have to try and guess what movie it is that we're talking about.
Well, I'll give it a
All
shot.
right, so I will spin the wheel and let's see what movie comes up. What remake comes up here? Okay. This is a very interesting choice. This is definitely something that I know you've seen. You've definitely seen the original. My assumption is you've seen the remake also, but we will find out shortly about that. Okay. The original movie came out in 1962. The remake was made in 2004. And so it's about a former soldier who seems to be having.
All right, can I answer
Yes,
now?
sure, Ted.
This is the Manchurian Candidate.
Yes, it is. That is right. The original with Frank Sinatra and Laurence Harvey, and the remake with Denzel and Liev Schreiber. Yeah. Did you like the remake of this one?
I saw it only one time. I didn't hate it. I do remember that they kind of changed a little, quite a bit of it, and how it was supposed to function. So I couldn't endorse it at the moment, but I know when I saw it, when it first came out, that it was, I didn't object to it because they did make changes to it that just kind of, it's a different storyline. It's a similar concept, but a different plot line.
Okay. Again, I'm a big advocate against remakes. So, there are very few which I will say that I really enjoy the remake. There are a few, a few that we've also talked about over the last month or so. But the Manchurian Candidate, I think the remake is fine. But again, it's nowhere near as great as the original, in my opinion. So.
Oh yeah, not even close.
Exactly. Okay. So, Richard, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Richard Kirkham?
Okay, well, you can find me at my own personal blog site, Kirkham A Movie A Day. I have a WordPress site. That's the link that you look for, the URL address, kirkhamamovieaday.com. But I also have a Blogspot site that I use that has links to everything that I do eventually. It's a little bit more complete. The main content is exactly the same on both sites, but the Blogspot site has links to other things that I'm doing as well. You can also find me weekly on the Lamcast, which is the podcast of the large association of movie blogs. I'm the host of the weekly podcast there. And, we get together with four or five other film fans every week and talk about new movies, old movies. We do draft shows, we have comparisons, we do look backs, lots of different things. So, and there's a usually a illustrated version of the podcast that comes up as well. So you can find the Lamcast on all of the podcast locations that you can use. And if you go to YouTube, you can find us. We've got a channel for all of our videos.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, achoo.
Gesundheit.